Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine, and this is the second Friday of January. So today I will be taking your calls and answering your questions about narcissistic abuse. I know that that a lot of you are listening and that you cannot call in because I'm getting your emails. I'm getting you're calling me for counseling, so I know that you're out there listening and you're telling me to continue this. I am getting your letters, and I will answer them as I get them. So that's a really, really good way to to get your questions answered by me if you can't call in. And I understand that 11 o'clock a.m. on a Friday is not always convenient for everybody, so I do understand that. But if you would like to call in, the number is 424-220-1801. Before I get started, I just want to tell you a little bit about my counseling services. A lot of you are calling me now for counseling, and I really do believe that I can help you. And so it doesn't only have to be about narcissistic abuse. It can be any life issues, life issue concerns. But the way I do it is the sessions are all over the telephone, so you could be anywhere and call me. It's set up sort of like a conference call. So we both get a number to call in. We both get a code. We call in and connect, so you can remain completely anonymous if you choose. My fees are extremely reasonable. It's like a dollar a minute, $60 an hour. I don't think you could even, that's probably less than a copay if you were to use your insurance. So you can go to my website, randygfine.com, and go to the page of Fine Life Issues Counseling, and there is all my policies and a direct link to Clarity, which is the site where you can make your appointment. So I would love to speak with you. If you're hurting, if you need my help, please do call. The other thing is that I'm still trying to build the page Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United on Facebook. A few of you have joined since I left that message with you on the show. So I'm looking for a lot more of you to join. So please just head on over there, Narcissistic Survivors Abuse United with, I don't think it says with Randy Fine, but it's Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United on Facebook. So please head on over there and support the page for me. And one more thing, as long as I'm talking about business before I get started, I'm about halfway through writing my book about narcissistic abuse. It's going to be really, really good. And I would love to have some of your stories to put in there. So if you would like to have your story in my book, please send it to me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, R-A-N-D-I-G-F-I-N-E.com, and give me permission to use it. So that's about all the business I have for this morning. So let me get started. I have a letter from someone with the initial E, and this is what she says in her letter. I just discovered your podcast after I typed in narcissistic personality disorder in my iPhone podcast app. I quickly listened to all the recent podcasts on NPD, and thank you so much. You are doing a great service. I, too, am the daughter of a mother with NPD. I am the second of three sisters, and we actually diagnosed her when we were in our late 20s and early 30s, after my sisters were in counseling for their own private issues. I feel like I have a lifetime of questions to ask you. So many things you said ring true. My father is the kindest man I have ever met, and my mom controls him like a puppet. Early on, we knew he would not stand up for us since he couldn't even stand up for himself. Years ago, my sister told me it was like if she had Down syndrome because NPD has no treatment, no cure. I've been the one that has been the closest to my mother, the one that would defend her when my sisters just couldn't take it anymore. It would hurt me to hear them say she was hopeless. I also think I am an empath, and thank you again for introducing me to that term. I can't even watch funny video shows on TV where people get hurt pulling stunts, and the animal abuse commercials destroy me. When I meet people, I immediately know where they are coming from, almost like if I can see the range of their emotions and fears. Well, I could go on and on, but my most current issue is that I feel I have trapped myself. I know that the best thing to do is just cut her off, but I cannot. I have a 20-month-old daughter with my husband and have relied on my mother to help me take care of her. We always had to hire a nanny to help her, both of which lasted about 8 months before they told me they couldn't stand her anymore. Now I am lucky that my older sister has taken time off work to help me since I am the primary breadwinner. We just currently bought a duplex because I wanted to buy a home and my husband and I couldn't take living in the next space next door to my mother. So we each have an apartment, my husband and I, and my parents next door. As much as my mother is a demon, I feel like my father is an angel, and I forgive his weaknesses. 50 years loving this woman has taken him to an old age with absolutely no savings, so I help him as much as I can. I am lucky. My husband is Cuban and outspoken, so used to getting stuff out in the open. My mother will spew her crazy illogical statements, and my husband will immediately call her on it. So now she will only come over occasionally, and my older sister, who, when she didn't have daily contact with my mother, would try to console me and remind me that I had to just be the bigger person. Now that she has to face my mother daily, she can barely put up with her and just flatly tells her to leave. So we are kind of a united front, but we still have to rely on her sometimes to take care of my daughter, and she is young and will soon go to daycare and kindergarten. But am I putting my daughter at too high a risk? My mom is not physically violent, and my daughter loves her, but I don't want her crazy NPD mind getting to my baby. Is there any way to minimize the risk? Is there anything I can do? I also have other questions just in case you need them during your radio show. So we'll get on to those other questions in a few minutes. Excuse me. Okay. The first thing I want to say is I understand that you do have a father who is an enabler, and that you know, he is a saint and he's a really nice man and everything, and that you forgive his weaknesses. And I think it's okay to forgive his weaknesses. But what I want you to know is that this is a choice that he has made. Yes, he has been a victim of abuse, but I see lots of victims of abuse that get out of it. There are reasons why your father has stayed, and they are self-serving reasons. He's getting what he needs, and your mother is getting what she needs. And I'm going to talk a lot more about that in my book, but just to let you know that your father as nice as he is not able to protect his children. And to me, that is criminal, because a parent's job is to stand up for their children, to advocate for their children. And parents who are enablers to their narcissistic spouses do not protect their children. Their spouses come first. And I have a hard time respecting that. I understand why they do it, but I also understand that they have selfish reasons for doing it. So it's okay to understand that person and to forgive that person, but I want you to be realistic about the fact that he may be very kind, but he has not been a parent to you. I would assume that if what you're telling me is true. The first question you asked is that your mother babysits for your daughter, and you want to know if you're putting your daughter at too high a risk. Well, my parents took care of my daughter when she was young, and they did an excellent, excellent job, because my daughter was the only grandchild, and she became the golden child. She kind of replaced me, because I was the golden child. So they did a really, really good job of it. Now, once my daughter was able to start talking, I noticed some things. I noticed that my mother had quite a control over her emotionally and mentally. And my mother would say things to my daughter, and somehow they would manifest. It was very, very strange. Like, she'd say, don't stand in front of that swing because you're going to get hit. And my daughter was far away from the swing, but somehow the swing would hit her. Whatever my mother would say, my daughter seemed to leave an impression on her. So one day I asked my daughter, I said, when Grandma tells you something and I tell you something, who do you believe? And who do you listen to? And she said, Grandma. And my heart stopped, and I knew exactly what was going on there. So I had to have a talk with my daughter. Now, she was, I guess, about 3 years old at this age, and I was able to talk with her and reason with her and sort of get things squared away. The other thing that's really important to do if you need to rely on your mother is to make sure that your daughter has very strong boundaries, that she knows what is and what is not tolerable, that if mommy has rules that grandma is breaking, that this is not okay. I'm not talking about giving her a little bit extra sweets or something like that, doing what grandmothers do. I'm talking about rules. If grandma is doing something that mommy clearly says is wrong, that she has to understand that grandma is just the babysitter and mommy is her mommy and the one in charge of her. So these need to be dialogues, regular dialogues that you have with your child, to monitor the progress of what's going on with her over there and to make sure that she is not getting confused. Other than that, while she's little, I don't really see too much of a problem. Just monitor it. And I think it's really important that children have their grandparents in their life, as long as their grandparents are loving and kind to them. If their grandparents are not, that is an absolute no-no. As soon as there is abuse or maltreatment, then that is a no-no. But as long as they're loving, I don't think that there's any problem. Just keep an eye on it. So that's what I have to say about that. Now, another question you asked me is NPD a genetic disorder? Are we born with it, or is it something that is learned or suffered? Well, the jury is kind of still out on that. But what studies have shown is that in order to develop it, there is usually a genetic predisposition. So if you don't have that genetic predisposition, you can be in an environment that would produce it and perhaps not get it. The other thing is that it does happen in childhood. This is not something that happens later on. This is something that develops in childhood as some kind of defense mechanism. Sometimes the children are, the parents put such high expectations on the child that they can never reach them. So they have to develop their own sense of self and their own sense of grandiosity in order to feel successful in their life, because they never reach their goals. Another thing that happens is children who grow up in extreme poverty or are shamed may develop this narcissistic personality disorder as a way to overcome it, to live a fantasy life that does not involve the shame or the poverty. So it's basically to sort of make up for what they don't have, to overcome what they cannot tolerate. And it is more prevalent in males than it is in females, although we wouldn't think that because we hear a lot about narcissistic mothers and not so much about narcissistic fathers. But this does happen predominantly to men. That's what study shows. It doesn't mean that it's true. And because narcissists very rarely get treatment, there's not a lot of hard evidence or, you know, hard studies on this. So there's no real answer as to why they develop it, but these are the theories. What are the childhood signs of NPD? Well, NPD cannot be diagnosed until a child is an adult, until a child becomes an adult. However, they usually don't get diagnosed at that point either. But the signs of a child with NPD is they require extreme praise. They want adulation, admiration for everything that they do. Now, all children want that, but I'm talking about to an extreme level where they just everything and all else stops, and the world must focus on them. Another thing about these children is they cannot tolerate rejection or failure. Other children may get sad about it. They may be upset about it. They may talk about it, but they don't rage about it. A narcissistic child, when they are met with failure or told that they're wrong or anything like that, goes into a rage. They cannot tolerate it. They have symptoms exactly the same as an adult would have, grandiosity, superiority, haughtiness towards others. Another thing is that they are unempathetic. Children are generally sensitive to the needs of others. A narcissistic child would not be. You would see a coldness about them. You would see, when mommy feels sad, they don't care. When their sisters or brothers are unhappy, they don't care. They don't care about the animals. They don't care about anybody. They're just cold and insensitive. So when you see a child that lacks empathy towards the feelings of others, that can be a sign. Bullying can be a sign. It's not always narcissism, but it can be a sign. Another sign is that a child's needs and interests are more important than anybody else or anything else. Their needs are primary. You know, children go through stages where they are self-focused, and that's very, very normal. But we're talking about a child who's beyond the stage where they are self-focused, where they're starting to make friends and understand that they need to share and that they need to compromise and things like that. But a narcissistic child will be very self-centered at that time and continue to be that way, and they will not progress. And so these are some of the signs. Okay, another question asked is, are all NPD sufferers sociopaths? This is an interesting question because it gets confused a lot. A lot of people that write about narcissistic personality disorder will call them psychopaths or sociopaths. All sociopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are sociopaths. And there's a lot of similarities and a few distinguished differences. Narcissists, when they control because they need supply. They need their narcissistic supply. So there's a reason for them to control. Sociopaths manipulate and control just for the fun of it. They just think it's amusing to do this to people. So there's a different motivation for the manipulation and control. Let me just stop for a second and tell you, if you want to call in and ask your question, the number is 424-220-1801. I would be happy to answer your questions. If not, you can read the show page, and it'll tell you how to email me. Okay? All right, getting back to the difference between the sociopath and the narcissist. Narcissists rely heavily on the validation of others. We see that. They want to be recognized. Sociopaths don't need that. They don't care if they're recognized. Their behavior does not depend on the validation of others. Narcissists exploit people, and so do sociopaths, but narcissists do it because it somehow upsets their agenda, what they're trying to do, how they're trying to manipulate. It threatens them in some way. They will exploit people to get them back as a retaliation because they feel threatened, because it's getting in their way. A sociopath just does it because they think it's amusing to exploit people. A sociopath will, you know how narcissists will never give a sincere apology? They may say, I'm sorry if you think I hurt you, or something like that, but you'll never get a real apology out of a narcissist. Well, sociopaths will apologize. They will apologize if there's an end goal to it, if it somehow benefits them. So that's the distinction. If you're looking at your narcissist and you get a genuine apology, you might start thinking sociopath. Not definitely, but you might start thinking it, because I've never seen a narcissist who will ever apologize for their behavior because they don't think anything they do is wrong. And they're not willing to let you think they do. So this, you know, this narcissistic facade that they have keeps them from ever apologizing. So if you get a sincere apology from someone that you think is a narcissist, they may also be a sociopath, and you may want to take a second look. Sociopaths do as little effort as possible when they're trying to accomplish something. They want the easiest way through it. So they're fairly lazy. They want others to do the work for them. Narcissists, on the other hand, are so motivated by adoration, and attention that they are highly motivated to accomplish a goal. So there's a pretty distinct difference. Narcissists are not usually lazy. And they usually don't get other people to do their stuff for them in every aspect of their life. Okay, so they, you know what I'm saying is, there may be times when they may be lazy, but if that is not the dominant characteristic of them, then they may have sociopathic tendencies. That is, that's pretty much the answer for, are all NPD sufferers sociopaths? So the answer is no. They can be. They may not be. And the other thing is that there's a cluster B group of empathic devoid personality disorders that include psychopathy, sociopathy, narcissistic personality disorder, borderline, I don't know if I said NPD, histrionic personality disorder. There's a whole bunch of them in there. And they generally don't just have one without having symptoms of the other. So they may predominantly be one way, but have aspects of the other cluster B personality disorder. So that's just something to keep in mind. Okay. Why have so few people heard of this? When I complain about my mom, no one gets it. They all just tell me she wants the best for me, that we have problems communicating, but no, she is not just all about her. I think we all relate to this one. People don't understand this. And the reason they don't understand it is that because As survivors of narcissistic abuse, there's a couple of things. First of all, the mechanisms that we use to get through it are sometimes delusional, denial-based. So we may do things in this relationship that may not look right to the outside. We do it because our subconscious mind takes over and helps us to cope. People that suffer narcissistic abuse generally do not have healthy coping skills, and so they default to their subconscious when things get bad. So their behavior doesn't always look right. It looks like we're complying. It looks like we're giving in. But we're not really doing it consciously. We're doing it out of survival. The other thing is that narcissists don't abuse when others are looking. There's very rarely witnesses to what they do. So they're two-faced. They have one personality when they're abusing. They have the other personality when they're out trying to get admiration. So no one will ever see that side of the narcissist, and they will not believe you. And this is why I advise everyone to not discuss your problems with people who have not experienced narcissistic abuse. They will make you feel bad. They can't see it. If you're talking about a parent, they'll say, oh, well, they're getting older, you can't be like that, or the Ten Commandments say you must honor your father and your mother. All these kind of things will get thrown at you. These things don't apply when you're dealing with a narcissistic person. Nothing applies. No rules apply when you're dealing with these people. It's all about how you can survive, and the way to survive is to only discuss this with people who know what they are talking about and don't. I mean, I have had this happen to me. I've been in tears amongst a group of 9 women who came down on me so hard. While I'm trying desperately to prove my point, they're trying desperately to unprove it, and it just beats you down and makes you feel terrible about yourself. So just don't do it. Is there a way to check yourself when you are in the middle of a transfer of anger, hurt? When I know she is feeling terrible, she will prod and prod until I burst out in tears, and then she is just fine and acts like nothing happened, and then I am the one who suffers. Is there anything I can do to remind myself of this pattern so I can exit the situation, at least emotionally, if not physically? Yes. Learn to pause and think before you respond, because they are going to push your buttons. Narcissists are button pushers. They get to know our weak points. They know how to get us to react, and they love to get us to react. It's just amusing. They love it. So we don't want them to do that. We want to give them no fodder for the things that they do to manipulate us. So we need to pause. We need to think, and we need to try not to react. That's always not easy. For me, I couldn't learn to do that until I separated from my parents for about a year, went into therapy, and learned how to develop my boundaries and make them very strong. And then when I went back into a relationship with my parents, I didn't react. But that doesn't come about so easily, and not everybody can do it when they still are actively in a relationship with their narcissist. Sometimes you have to remove yourself and develop a boundary system in order to not do that. If you have not done that, and you do recognize that your buttons are being pushed, leave. Just get up and leave. If you can't do that, walk out of the room. The best thing to do is to let the person know that this is not acceptable, and if you continue this, I will be leaving. Or if you're on the phone, same thing. I don't find what you said acceptable. If you continue this, I will hang up the phone. And then if they continue, just hang up the phone. Now, if you've given fair warning over and over and over, and they continue to do this, then you don't need to give any more warning. Just do it. Just leave or get up and, you know, hang up the phone or leave. Just go ahead and employ these skills, because you've already warned them enough. You don't have to warn them again. Just do it. Eventually, it's sort of like training a child. They learn by trial and error, and they learn by a certain amount of conditioning through discipline. So we have to discipline our parents not to behave that way, and so that they know, or even, I'm not just talking about parents, I'm talking about spouses or any, could be employers or anything like that. We have to condition them that when they do A, we're going to do B. And eventually they will get it. It's not easy, and it's not easy to enforce, but eventually it will work. And the last question. My husband thinks I am too sensitive, and sometimes I think he is too harsh. How can I get him to understand that I am trying to overcome a lifetime of abuse from this woman? He is honestly baffled by her, and even more baffled that my dad is still with her. He gets mad at me for not setting her straight, but I keep telling him I am powerless against her, that she is who she is, and all we can change is how we react to her. Is there any literature in Spanish that I could give to him to help him understand and take it a little easier on me, or is it that I have to stick up for myself more? Well, I don't think I can help you as far as Spanish literature because I don't speak Spanish, and I really wouldn't even know where to begin with that. But there are things for you to do. Okay, one of the things is, like I said with confronting a narcissist, it's the same with trying to explain it. I talked about that earlier. Your husband will never understand because he has not walked in your shoes. My husband is extremely sympathetic. I've been married for 27 years, and he is by my side all the time and extremely sympathetic. But he will admit, I cannot relate. I cannot relate. It's very, very hard to convey this to somebody who has not experienced it. I talked earlier about the covertness and overtness of the narcissists and how they abuse behind closed doors and no one ever gets to see what they do, and also the defense mechanisms that are employed and the thinking that goes on with us that allows us to endure these kind of traumatic situations. So they will never understand the workings of your mind and why you think the way you think, act the way you do, and why you endured what you did. Also, why you cannot confront your abuser. We are conditioned by our narcissist to believe that they are these huge wizards of Oz, that they are all-powerful and almighty over us, and that we are these little people, little puppets that they pull the strings on. Well, the truth of the matter is, when you pull the curtain away from Oz, the Wizard of Oz, he's just a little man like you and I. And so we have to get our minds into that way of thinking, that this person is not as big and almighty as we have given them the power to believe, given them the power in our own minds to believe that they are. So if you explain this to your husband in terms that he can try to understand, explaining to him that having never experienced it, he cannot see it through your eyes. Just say that what you need from him is support and validation. Just to say, I'm here for you, and I'm trying to understand the best I can. I know I can never understand, but I'm trying to be there for you, validate your feelings, and understand that you are doing the very best you can with what you know. You certainly can search for things in Spanish to try to find something about narcissistic abuse. I just can't help you out there. But if he speaks Spanish, if he speaks English, you certainly can give him my articles. You can have him listen to this podcast or any of my other podcasts. Sometimes that helps to wake up people because as abuse victims, this is how we woke up. We didn't know what we were suffering from. We knew we hurt, but we didn't know what we were suffering from. So once we found literature and we began to read and identify it, we went, oh, yes, there it is. So and I know over time, my husband, I've had many talks with him about this, And he's beginning to see it and understand the craziness of it. He will never understand it, but he's beginning to see it. So, you know, as much as your husband can be, as much information as he can get would be great, and I think you know that. But the other thing is, don't ask for him to understand. Ask for him to be there for you, validate your feelings, and try to understand that you are hurting. Not to understand what happened to you or what you're going through, but just to validate that you are hurting badly and that you are sinking and trying to find a raft or something to cling on to. And once you do, and once you learn, that you can learn to undo these patterns. But for now, if you don't get the support and the validation, you won't be able to do that. So you need that. You need that rock. That something you can hold on to. It, whether it's your spouse or a friend or a therapist, counselors. I know this is one of the first things that I do with my counseling clients is I validate and verify and explain, and that is the first step in helping to feel better. So these are the things to ask for. She says, thank you so much for all your help. Just knowing you are out there is comforting. And I'm so glad that I can be out there for you. There's more and more information out there about narcissistic abuse. You know, the problem is that there is something called a DSM-5, which is the Bible, the reference book that all mental health professionals use to diagnose a condition. Well, narcissistic abuse is not a condition in the DSM. So when they go to school, they are not trained to diagnose a narcissistic abuse victim. They can diagnose the symptoms of it. They may diagnose your depression. They may diagnose your anxiety. They may diagnose that you have marital issues or childhood issues. But they won't recognize the syndrome, which is called narcissistic victim syndrome, which encompasses a lot of the things that I've just talked about. So it's not taught to, maybe it is now, from the literature I've read and the research I've done, in the past it has not been taught to therapists. So they're not trained to recognize it. But some really good therapists have seen this come time and time again and know how to look for it and know what to do with it. But in general, this is not recognized as a syndrome. And we all know that it is. We all know how painful it is, and we know how complicated it is and how confusing it is. So that's why I always recommend that you seek out help with somebody that understands. I understand. I know this inside and out, and I can help you. So if you want help, I'm one that can do it. I have to tell you, I am not a licensed counselor, but I am extremely knowledgeable in this and extremely skilled in helping others overcome it. I've done it time and time again, so I can help you. So I hope that answers a lot of your questions. And if you do have questions that I've not answered today, you can email me again at loveyourlife@randygfine.com and send me these questions, send me your story, send me these questions, and I will answer them the next show, which is the second Friday of February. I don't have the date in front of me, but it's the second Friday in February, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. The number to call in is 424-220-1801. You can call in and talk to me, or you can send it ahead of time. And like I answered this letter, I will answer yours. And again, please check out Narcissistic Victims Abuse Survivors United on Facebook and like it so we can get some strong support there. And you can always visit my website at randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com, for my articles, links to every show that I do, and my Fine Life Issues Counseling. There's links that link you directly from that site, from my website, right to the place where you can make appointments. So you can do that. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower, and then you will be advised of the programming. I don't just do narcissistic shows. I do shows about all aspects of healing the human condition and well-being of the human condition. So, and the programming that I have is always amazing. I'm booked now through March, and I have some of the most interesting people that you just in your life you will just never cross these people. So I'm bringing you some exceptional things, so you want to be advised of that and keep listening. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, author, and counselor Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RandyGFine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Better way.